Oh no no, oh no no, it's another episode of the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker. You've entered the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker.
Hey, you've just entered the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker. If you've come for actual legal advice, you need to turn right around, honey. You need to get out of here, because you ain't going to get none of that. They quibble, and they squabble, and they bicker. But if you want to hear meaningless opinions, this is the right place. They got plenty of that. Stuff that makes no sense at all. They go off on tangents. It's crazy talk. If that's your thing, keep listening. They'll keep talking.
Welcome back to the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker on this December 2nd, 2020. And we have a brand new client today, which is weird because, you know, normally our client's the same client every single time. But this time, it's a different one. And this client is aging is fun, but hard on the knees. Brendan did a good job of collecting this client for us. So, Brendan, why don't you give us some details here about what that means?
Well, you know, I think as we all get older, the weird disconnect between how old you feel mentally and how old you feel physically starts to occur. You know, it's like I still feel like I'm, you know, in my 20s, you know, mentally.
Yeah, I hear you.
But physically, no. Like, I'll get out of bed, and I'm like, did somebody beat me up in the middle of the night? How does this happen? Or, you know, I notice now, Bridget, my daughter, will call them dad noises. When I get up, I'm like, and I'll sit down, and I'm like, oh, my God, when did I start doing that?
I do so much groaning. It's pathetic.
Yeah, so, you know, aging is fun. There's certainly a lot, you know, to be said for it. I feel wiser than I was as a young person, but not completely, but more so. But at the same time, the body stuff just really drags you down.
Yeah, I say hard on the knees is definitely appropriate for me. I guess it was about 15, 16 years ago. So I would have been late 30s, just walking down a flight of like four steps. And then suddenly one of my knees just gave out. I wasn't even like nearly overweight compared to where I am now. You know, it was just this bizarre thing where I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Why am I in like this excruciating pain from my knee? And why did it just go? And I was walking down without going at an angle or anything else, just a couple of steps. And then bam, I'm like, what's happening here? So I think that for me was one of the biggest moments of I'm getting near there. Because they say, what, the age 40, you're over the hill, right? Supposedly that's like the breaking point because it's kind of a midway point between when people croak. Because a lot of people die around the age of 80 or so.
You know? Yeah, 70. I think 78 is the for men. I think it's 78. But
yeah. I think it's – there's so many different averages that throw that get into the middle of that. You know,
in a strange way, I was lucky because in my young years, I had a bad back since I was 14 or 15, and I was always overweight. So I never felt that good, you know, doing anything physical. So my decline, I didn't have as far to fall from. Like, if I can imagine if you're like a healthy young guy who jogs every day, and then when you hit 50 or 40, you start feeling worse and worse. I always never felt that good.
I'm just glad you stopped barking at us, Greg, because I was tired of you barking at us.
I'm angry about it. I'm so angry at barking about this.
We still have kids transitioning out of the house, so every time somebody comes or goes, the dog goes off.
But transitioning?
Yeah.
They do it really fast at Brendan's house.
Yeah, it happens.
They're really fast at Brendan's house.
But for me, it was, I must have been, again, I was probably in my mid-30s, maybe early 30s, 33, 34, something like that. And for some reason, I decided to go out and get a skateboard because I was a skateboarder as a lad. And so I go and I spent, I don't know, God, 100, 200, almost 200 bucks, you know, new trucks and wheels and this cool deck and got it all home and fixed it all up. And I'm like, I'm going to go skateboarding. So I go out, I'm skateboarding along, and I'm fine for a while. And then, you know, I went to do an ollie, right?
What's an ollie?
An ollie is a trick you do where you kind of make your skateboard jump up. Like you see people skateboarding and then they hop up on a curb.
Okay.
And it's the thing you do with your feet. You kind of go pop, pop, and pop it up.
Okay.
Anyway, I decided I'm going to do an ollie. And that didn't go well. And I wrecked. I just smashed it. Which, when I was a kid, wasn't a big deal. But I laid there on the sidewalk for a while going, oh, my God. This is not the way it was when I was a kid. I would wreck hard. And then just
were there young skaters around you laughing at you?
No,
like, thank you. Oh, man.
No.
I learned that gravity is a lot more punishing as you get older. That you feel it feels like you just land harder and more solidly. I hear myself lumbering around my house, and lumbering is the correct term. We're talking about me walking around, and I hear like the noises that I create walking through the house, going, "My, it's like everything's solid. It's like somebody put cement shoes on me, and I'm just like thud."
like Frankenstein,
gravity has just forced itself upon me where like I'm just fighting this thing. I think it's partially because I'm the size of a small moon, but besides that point, you know,
that's
just,
why we revolve around you, your gravity.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. At that point, I wasn't overweight. I am definitely overweight now, but at that point, I wasn't. So I don't know. I got up and looked at the skateboard, looked around to see if anyone was looking at me or laughing, went home and promptly gave my new $200 skateboard to my son and said, here, you have a skateboard now.
What a great dad.
My first major, back giving out was actually in my first honeymoon with my first wife.
Oh, this sounds like a good story.
No, it wasn't because of that. No, it was just like,
damn.
3 days of my honeymoon was me spent laying there going, oh, this is great. This is great. But it was a good honeymoon regardless. We did lots of things, but yeah, that kind of sucked as part of it. But
what kind of things? Just kidding.
We went to like a wild safari, and I think we were staying at a timeshare that my uncle owned near the beach near San Diego. So we had a lot of really fancy dinners while we were down there. And so, yeah, it was a good time.
I was fishing for something else, but that's okay.
Yeah, we got free tickets in the safari thing because some people had these extra tickets and gave them to us. You know, we just happened to get lucky. So anyway, and I had about $2,000 to spend too. That was nice. I'd gotten from relatives. So that was my dad said, and I'm not going to give you any gifts. He's like, I remember that when I went on my honeymoon, the thing that I needed was money. So here's some money. I was like, oh, thank you.
Nice.
Yeah,
so it's
very, very, very practical.
It's good advice.
It's better than Tupperware.
And he was damn right.
Yeah.
The money was necessary because, you know, we had a rental car. And anyway, so, but later on in life, and after having a kid, I was like on a trip and I flew back and my kid comes up to hug me and I go to pick up the kid and then the back goes out again. And then I'm like laid up for like a week. And so that would have been in my early 30s. So I think that was like when things, the progression began, you know, little things starting, you know, here and there. And then it became regular having back issues for the rest of my life, essentially.
I consider myself so lucky, like all the guys like you guys and other guys I know that are my age that have back problems, knee problems. I've had none of that. I had some sort of herniated disc once where it hurt and I went to the chiropractor and I don't know, 3-4 weeks later, he had done whatever witch doctor shit he did.
You're totally
and
jinxing
it was fine.
It right now. You shouldn't talk about this. You're jinxing. No, but
he doesn't believe in jinxing.
No, but No, I don't believe in jinxing. But what I have found I have is all sort of gut-related issues, like, you know, like heartburn, like, you know.
You got the lactose thing you were saying before.
Yeah, I became lactose intolerant at some point. Most of my issues revolve around my ever-expanding gut. and so it's all centralized. And it doesn't lay me up. There are times where, you know, I'm like, oh, my God. You know, and I'm like, I have Tums. I never thought I would be that guy. I've got like Tums on my desk, and I'm like eating Tums. And
I gotta say, it's like when I get, as I get older, I get, you know, I'm breaking down more and more. And even if I'm like in a wheelchair, I think I might still be content with old age because, you know, I could still read my comic books and stuff. But I gotta say, that first time the doctor says, "Oh, Greg, you can't eat spicy foods anymore, or you can't eat this," I'm gonna be like, "Just give me euthanasia. Just kill me." Like, I've had an iron gut my whole life. For all my problems, I could eat anything. I was like a garbage disposal. I've never had indigestion. I never get that even now. I'm 53 and I could eat anything. Nasty food. So I'm lucky that way. But I gotta say, I'm gonna pack it in when they're like, "Oh, Greg, you can only eat wheat germ and, I don't know, honeysuckle or something, only, whatever."
Yeah.
Wheat germ. Is that a new diet?
Whatever restricted diet I'm on, I'm going to be like, nah.
Yeah, you have to
eat. You're only allowed to eat beeswax.
Shoelaces. What was that, Brendan?
I said he's only allowed to eat beeswax.
And bee pollen supplements.
And bee pollen, yeah.
No, I've been fortunate, too. I don't really have gut issues either. I have so many other freaking weird things. So for me, it's like mental stuff is what I have, you know, because I have, I've had these like mini strokes, you know, for, I think it started about 6 or 7 years ago. I just was, I don't know what happened, but I wound up having some kind of seizures, and they lasted for, I guess, overall about 3 weeks. You know, where they would just come on randomly and I'd just be sitting on the couch, and I would describe myself as like a cross between like Joe Cocker and Sylvester Stallone. You know, where I'd be like, and I couldn't speak, and they would get aggravated, you know, and I thought this was the extent of my life now. I thought I was literally going to be incapable of being a real human anymore because it was incapacitating. Yeah. I basically took myself off the road because they would come at unexpected times. And I'm like, I couldn't in good conscience be driving.
Yeah.
Right.
Possibly happen, you know? And, you know, I had a stutter issue too. So I couldn't really get thoughts out very well. And yeah, it was so strange. And then, you know, I was like, all right, well, they wanted to put me on some kind of weird anti-anxiety medication or something like that. They said I had something called a conversion disorder, you know, because some way of managing or handling stress or something. I'm like, okay. Yeah. I'm like, I'm glad you've got a label for it. I said, but I would like to try some alternative methods before I go full blown psychotropic medication thing to try and fix this stupid thing. And so I went and looked up something online for alternative health, and turns out there's a guy on there that I knew. I went, oh, he does this type of thing. He's a chiropractor. So I went and gave him a call and rang him up, and he adjusted me. He said, like, I had some compressed vertebrae in my my neck, and he had me go get an x-ray, and that's how he figured that out. And then he, like, adjusted me, and the next day the seizures had diminished, and then by the following week, gone. Right. Wow. So I had had like 2 weeks of this with no let up. I'd seen neurologists, CAT scans, all this stuff. I was still a twitching freaking maniac. As a matter of fact, I remember going to a doctor's appointment with my wife, and I had to warn them that there will come a point where it seems like I'm having a heart attack or something. And I'm like, and that's not what it is. You know, it's just I've been having these seizures, and they come on, and it definitely happened like twice. And they're like, "Thank you for letting us know, because we would have had to do something if we saw that happening." I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, deal with her. She's got her own problems." So anyway, and so then 3 years later, it happened once again, but it was just like a day thing, and paramedics were called because it was happening in my house. And luckily, by the time paramedics got there, I had kind of gotten. It was actually the day I moved into this house, or it was like we were moving stuff in. It was like incredibly stressful period, you know, because there was like this forced eviction happening from our old house while we were buying this house and trying to move in at the same time. And so, and then getting everything moved. And then all of a sudden I'm sitting in a chair and suddenly I start going, "Hey, hey, hey, hey." I'm like, "Damn it, it's back," you know. And again, luckily the ambulance was called, by the time they started checking me out, I kind of regained my composure and I was able to stop them from taking me to the hospital.
Right.
And then, what was it, a few weeks ago or a few months ago, where it happened again. And yeah. This time I actually did go, wound up going to the hospital for a couple of days.
I remember that.
Yes. So now I take a baby aspirin every day to help with preventing any, because they think it could have been like a blood clot in my brain or something. But ever since these things have happened, I have difficulty remembering what words to use sometimes whenever I'm trying to think of a thought. It's like, it just doesn't, I mean, I used to pride myself on being able to like grab the words out of the air and use the right ones whenever I needed to. And I was always like pretty on top of things. And now it's like this slowness has happened to my thinking. And it's just, gets very frustrating. I mean,
do you ever find yourself, I have that too, where words are definitely getting harder to grasp. And so I find myself using words I've never used in my life, like 50 cent words, if you will, because I can't think of the normal word at the moment. So I'll use some really fancy word, a synonym for it. Instead of saying like, I can't think of, oh, Matt's well-spoken, but I'll forget that word at the moment. So I'll be like, oh, Matt's quite erudite, which I've never used that word. When I was in my 20s.
Well, at least erudite is a word that would be appropriate. I was thinking you're using some word. I thought you'd be using synonyms. Words that didn't fit with what you were trying to say at
like
all.
Like aphasia. Like, Matt is quite.
He's quite aphasic right now.
No. Yeah, there are synonyms, but I find myself using words I've never, like only words I read. So somehow that's in my memory and that'll pop out instead of the normal word.
The word is a word that you read and.
No, I'm saying the words that I've only read. Like, nobody uses these words. But I knew what they meant. But instead of finding the normal, easy-to-use word, it just doesn't pop in. And some weird word from my memory bank will pop up. It's, nobody says that in conversation.
I find that, like, fascinating. I would love that to happen.
It is kind of weird.
Using words that, you know, don't normally use. I like to use words that are...
But probably people think I'm being pretentious, but I don't mean to be.
I think anybody who knows you would know that you're not pretentious.
I know.
I would agree with that.
You live amongst walls of comic books. Nobody would think you're pretentious, Greg.
But they're good comic books. They're the high quality ones.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've experienced a little bit of that. I have a thing where I think it's a blood sugar, again, gut related thing where if I don't get some sort of balance in my body or food, or like if I don't eat, you know, for a while, I'll start to shake a little bit. And then there'll be times if it gets really bad where I'll do that. I'll kind of like say, yeah. And so I was that thing, you know, I pull a total Joe Biden. It doesn't happen a lot. And I've learned to just like kind of ride it out. If it's happening, like I just kind of shut up and like gather my composure and then I'll say something. Yeah. It doesn't happen a lot, but I wish I was just pulling out thesaurus words. Yeah. That would be way cooler than
that's,
what I'm
that's
doing.
Another thing of like getting older is easy for me because I would always joke with my friends that I have Alzheimer's Jr. Like I had the worst memory growing up, like except about certain things like music trivia. Like I was Google before Google. My friends would call me up at 2 a.m. and say, Greg, who sang that song, Brandy or Fine Girl? You know, there wasn't a Google back then. I knew that. But other than that, memory was so bad.
I need to take issue with you referring to yourself as Google. Maybe regarding some trivia, but I can't imagine.
Exactly.
It would be not, like if somebody asks you, what are the names of every son that Ragnar Lothbrok, the great Viking mythological figure, had? You
would
just pull them out of
table.
Your head. Yes.
Yeah.
Or how many bricks are in the pyramid? Do you have
I'm
that
saying
to hand?
It was a very small thing my memory is good at, like comic book trivia and music.
So you
trivia,
weren't a Google, you were more of a goo.
Yes, I was just a goo. I was the goo. But
you're
I was that guy.
You're the goo in Google.
But even that sad, pathetic, trivial memory is going now. But I got to say, though, I'm ready for dementia because my whole life I've kind of been demented. Like I've had, this actually happened to me many times in my 20s. I'd go see a movie with someone. Let's say I saw a movie with my friend Joe. And
okay,
then
let's say
the
that.
The next day I'd see Joe at school and say, Joe, I just saw the best movie last night. And he'd be like, I was with you. Literally. I wasn't drinking then too, guys. Remember, I was sober until I was like
that 45. Happened to my best man at my first wedding.
Whenever I would do that all
I
the time.
I saw him like 10 years later. I was like, were you at my wedding? He's like, Matt, I was your best man. I was like,
that
oh
was
yeah.
10 years later though.
Yeah, but still, it was kind of embarrassing.
That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad.
You can't remember who your best man was.
I think one of the things that I found that makes it sort of makes me feel that way more than I mean, I'm still, I think, pretty got trivia shit on, but my kids will remember things from growing up that I have fucking no clue what they're talking about. They're like, Dad, remember that time that we did the thing and then we were going there and then you said that funny line and then we got ice cream? And I'm like,
Nope.
Not even, not zero.
My mother does that to me. No, go ahead.
Oh, yeah? I was going to say, I began to wonder if they're gaslighting me. Like, let's just do some crazy shit and fuck with Dad. Hey, Dad, remember when you dressed as an alligator and we went to the zoo? And I'm like,
we rode a unicorn through the park?
Yeah.
Remember that, Dad?
Yeah. No, you were an alligator. You had a hat. And I'm like, no, I didn't. And they're like, Dad. I don't know.
Remember that time Godzilla stepped in our house, Dad?
And my mother does something similar. She'll bring up stuff from my youth and go, why don't you remember that? I'm like, I don't know why I don't remember it. I'm like, because it's significant to you. It's not significant to me. So that's why I don't remember it. Yeah. So I can bring up stuff that you don't know. I remember I had a friend from high school who brought this thing up on Facebook once where she said, I remember you came to my house once and you ate all of our bacon. I went, what?
Wow.
Like I was visiting. She's like, yeah, you just like went to town on all of our bacon. I'm like, well, I apologize for being such a pig and eating all of your bacon. And second of all, I don't remember that at all.
Did they even offer you bacon or you just went to the fridge and started cooking up your own bacon?
I have a feeling it was already made and it was like something that we, I mean, I don't know why it was there, but my eyes are watering. That's the thing that's been happening to me as I've been getting older. My eyes freaking water for like no reason. Sometimes.
You're going through menopause.
Is that what it emotional. Is? You know, my boobs have been getting bigger, so that could be part of it.
Is that
more tender?
Perhaps a little bit. You know, the flow,
my mom has stopped, Greg.
So yeah.
My mom is a different thing where she doesn't remember anything from her childhood where she was the bad guy. Like even before her dementia set in, like she used to smoke in the car. In winter, New York, you couldn't roll the windows down. We'd all be like coughing. The kids would be like, Mom, please stop smoking. We can't breathe. She'd be like, shut up. And my mom was a great mom. Other than that, very protective.
Other than giving you, when she wanted
to smoke, she wanted to smoke. And she'd be like smoking away going, shut up. Just shut up. And we'd be like, Mom, please. And like years later, I brought that up. And she was like, I never did that. And we were all the brothers and sisters there were like, you totally did.
Wait, did she actually have that voice, that raspy, shut up, kids, you can't talk like that? Did she actually talk like that?
No, she didn't talk like Carl Malden. But
Malden didn't have like a scratchy voice like that.
Yeah, and I'm getting there because she smoked a lot. Yeah, so she had a slightly scratchy voice, but she would always conveniently forget all the times she did shitty things and always be like, that never happened. Shut up.
I have to say from personal experience, Greg, this happens to you nearly every week that you and I will have conversations about things and you'll completely forget everything that we talked about.
Do I forget shitty behavior or just things in general? Or is it like me in denial saying, Matt, I never did that shitty thing to you? My mom's memory.
You forget conversations that we had.
No, yes, I'm saying bad memory, but and drunk and alcoholic, but. Yes. My mom specifically just had a selective memory about things she didn't want to. She was basically lying. She would pretend they didn't happen. She had a great memory about other things.
I think we need to honor and revere our 70s parents, man. Those were the days. Kids with no seatbelts, smoking in the car. My mom smoked like a pack and a half a day in our like shitty little two-bedroom apartment.
While you were pregnant. Probably.
Yeah, while I was pregnant, there was a haze.
While Brenda was pregnant?
Yeah.
No, there was an LA
level of haze in our apartment. I knew that I could come home high as a kite, smelling of weed, and she would never know because she was just, the house was Keratin 100s, just back in the back, you know, watching Magnum PI.
Do you guys ever wonder how, like, our whole generation, our parents, I think all of our moms, my mom drank while she was pregnant. They didn't know. We didn't all grow up to be mongoloids. You know, like, it does seem this thing of, like, you can't have a drink when you're pregnant. Is it really true? I know it probably is. But all of our parents did. At least mine did, for sure.
I don't know. All of our friends did. What's wrong with our generation, Greg?
Well, there's many things wrong with every generation because humanity's flawed.
I'm not asking that. I'm saying, what's specifically wrong with our generation? What's different between, because we're Gen Xers, right? So,
yeah, and our parents drank.
What's wrong with our generation, Greg?
There's not enough of us.
There's not enough of us.
Yeah.
So we'll have no pull once the boomers all croak.
Yeah, I'm just saying it didn't seem like a race of super children grew up after they stopped drinking during pregnancy. It's not like, whoa, kids are so much smarter and better than they were a generation ago when moms were drinking during pregnancy.
See, we grew up in the time of neglect is what I think we grew up in. In other words, that's when, like, the latchkey kids were really getting really operational, and people were coming home to, the parents weren't home because both parents were working.
I loved it.
And I think that created a certain amount of self-sufficiency on our parts that we had to have.
Yeah.
You know, which is different now, where I think we give too much attention to the kids now, and they grow up being freaking highly filled with anxiety about things because they've, like, were never really given the opportunity to really screw up, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, genetically, like, biologically, like, drinking during pregnancy is such a no-no the past 30 years, but my parents did. Nobody thought that was bad, and we weren't all, like, grew up with, like, I don't know, flipper babies. And
well, Greg, would you say that your life has gone the way you wanted it to go?
Whose does? Wow. No, whose does, Matt?
Well, I'm just saying.
I'm
saying that maybe that's the effect of drinking had on you from your mother drinking during your pregnancy.
I'm definitely not that bright. I could have been smarter if my mom didn't drink.
Yeah, we don't know. We just don't know. I'm just saying that we don't know what it does.
True, but I didn't see this. It's not like scientists have said, whoa, since women have stopped drinking during pregnancy, our kids are so much smarter and less whatever. I don't know. Less diseases.
I think a way bigger factor, Greg, than parents drinking when they were pregnant, because I'm sure my mom did and smoked. I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
is that other chemical factors are what's really a problem. I mean,
yeah,
other drugs.
You know, no. Just shit in the environment. Like, yeah. I worked at an office back in the day, and I had, you know, employees and, you know, junior, you know, subordinates. And I can tell you for a fact that the young kids, when by young, I mean 30 to 25, were way more often calling in sick than somebody 40 up. And I don't think it was just always a Monday hangover type of situation, because I would talk to them and they'd have to bring a doctor's note if it was 3 days. I think young people are much more ill than we were as kids. I can't remember a serious illness when I was between, I don't know, 19 and 30. Maybe a flu hit me once. But young people now, I think there's something about the immune system that I don't know. I don't have the answer, but
I think that's definitely true. Like, if you're,
there's some truth to that. I've got five kids, and I think like three of them went through things like that, whereas two of them have not had any issues at all. You know, so it's like, it just depends. It really does depend. It's hard to say what the factors are that make up a screwed up birth, other than what happens after they're born and what the philosophies are the people raising them. You know?
No, what I'm saying is it's not a pre-birth thing. It's a post-birth thing. It's stuff they're exposed to in the environment. And, you know, the fact that no one drinks tap water anymore. And I drink shit out of the hose as a fucking 70s, 80s kid.
So I still do.
Yeah. And, you know,
other people's hoses.
Right. Yeah. So I think our immune system was stronger.
I think that's totally true. I think I was a dumpster diver for years, and I felt like I got less sick than most of my friends. I might just have a strong constitution, but I think I've inured myself to germs. I think, like, when the apocalypse comes, I'll be able to drink puddle water and not get dysentery.
So you could just go to the hospital and start licking COVID patients and you'd be fine.
Well, this is a novel virus.
And you can ask them to, like, breathe into your mouth directly, and you can handle it.
It's a novel virus.
I think you should test that theory out, Greg. I think you should go to every local hospital, ask for all the COVID patients.
I want to be quarantined.
Tell them that you want to give them some succor. You want to give them some solace and let them know that not everybody doesn't want to touch them. You'll be willing to touch them. They can breathe into your mouth, into your nostrils.
And to suck them. Give them succor and suck them.
They could lick your face. They can lick your eyeballs. You know what? Anything you want. You, I think, would be perfect.
This is a great idea, Matt.
Dying of
those ICU
patients.
One of the best ideas you've ever had.
Isn't it? You love my ideas, Greg.
So. I wouldn't be afraid of going into an emergency room full of COVID patients.
Really?
I wouldn't.
I would. I'd be a little worried.
I would be a little worried, but I wouldn't be terrified. I wouldn't be like, oh my God, I'm going to die or I'm going to get it. Because I just don't get sick that often. I just don't.
I said that till I got pneumonia.
Yeah, I haven't had pneumonia. I'm sorry to hear that.
I think the difference is that, you know, I started working in an occupation where I was dealing with people a lot. And a lot of people would come to my job sick or what have you. So it became a little easier for me to become susceptible for that. But before that, I used to always say I was like the healthiest fat guy somebody knew. I never had issues. I never had illnesses other than like maybe a cold once or twice a year, you know. And then I never got a flu shot or anything like that. But then, you know, there was this one time when I caught pneumonia and I'm like, okay, this sucks. never want that again, you know. But anyway.
I haven't had pneumonia.
Yeah, it wasn't fun. People were describing COVID as like basically COVID is a really bad case of pneumonia, and I went, oh, okay, I can relate to what somebody could be going through if they've gotten that. No, I've only had it the one time, and again, I never want to have it again. But I know people who've had it multiple times.
Yeah.
But you know, aging is supposed to be fun, so we've gotten way into the hard on the knees part. So what part of aging do you appreciate? What is it that you like about getting older other than knowing more than you used to know?
And the lessening of hormones.
I think for me it's been I let more things go than I used to let go. And like you guys give me crap about quibbling about things, but this is nothing compared to my youth. No, it's like the master quibbler, you know. It's like I had to correct everything, everyone, if I thought something was incorrect, to, you know, a point of making mistakes sometimes.
Yeah, you do
socially.
Mellow out in your old age. It's nice to mellow out a little. Sometimes you were too passionate about things and obnoxious, maybe even. So I've definitely had that too, where things that used to drive me crazy and I'd be all furious. I'm like, nah, let it go.
I'm just happy I got rid of my road rage that I used to have, because, man, I had, like, serious road rage back in when I was living in Washington, D.C. I would just, like, scream and yell and pound on my steering wheel because people were not going the direction I wanted them to go and flipping people off. And yeah. And
well, Washington, D.C. will do that to you. I drive in Florida, and Florida has its own unique stupid as far as driving goes, mostly because you've got two drivers. You've got some old 80-year-old man on the one hand, and then some methed out guy in a muscle car on the other. So there's just extremes. And if you're somewhere in the middle, you're fucked. But when I went to the last time I went to the Northwest, I went to Seattle, and I'm like, fuck, I'm gonna be driving in a big city, and then I have to drive down to Portland. I gotta deal with that sort of traffic. People up there, it would be hard to have road rage. I remember, like, in the car, just like, that fucker's not going to let me in. He's not going to let me in because Florida wouldn't let me in. And he just sort of slow down and let me in. And I'm like, what?
That's true. There are more polite drivers here than baggies. That's definitely.
Sometimes they're overly polite, though. I got to say, they're overly polite where, like, I have the stop sign. I'm riding my bike. Just go on through. You have the right of way, and you'll be out of my way, you know, before my bike even gets there.
I've learned that people here don't know what right of way means, apparently. They don't know that if you get there first, you're allowed to go first.
Yeah.
They don't get that.
Especially when I have the stop sign. Sometimes they don't even have a stop sign, and they stop for me, but I'm not sure they're stopping.
Those are the people that I still have road rage at, actually. are the ones who stop when there's no stops. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? I'm trying to get somewhere. You're stopping for no reason. What are you doing? Crazy people. And then I'll have a conversation with myself going, okay, why are you so angry, Matt? What are you being upset about? Why do you need to yell at people you don't even know? They don't deserve these names you're calling them.
But when you were 25, you would have went with it for a month.
Oh, I had people I would chase on the road, for crying out loud. I was psycho. No way. Yes.
Wow. You would chase them?
I was psychotic sometimes. Oh, yeah.
That's,
I
remember one time. Roadway.
Yeah, I was like trying to like get near them. Because it was just, yeah, it was, like I said, it was psycho. I had some psycho moments back in my 20s. You know, I think it was because of the after effects of taking acid. Is what I think happened.
No, don't blame acid. Acid's a great drink.
I can blame acid all I want. There was a time when I was on acid and I was driving down an interstate and I decided, I think I'm going to stop and go backwards for no reason.
Well, okay. A couple things in that statement. One, I'm quite confident I've done more acid than you. Two,
I'm quite confident you have as well.
Yeah. Two, you never drive on acid.
I learned that the hard way too.
Yeah, that's.
I thought you were joking. You actually drove on acid. I thought you were making a joke.
No.
You nut job. What are you thinking?
I remember one time I thought it was fine. We went to this blues festival, and it was like me. There were three of us. Two of us took acid. One guy didn't because he was the one who was supposed to do the driving afterwards. But we were there for like 8 hours. So I figured at the end of that, I would be okay because we took it at the very beginning. We were there for 8 hours. And then we started driving back, and I'm like, I'll be okay. I got this. You know, earlier, of course, during that evening, the two of us on acid threatened to assassinate the guy who wasn't. But that's a different story. So anyway, okay. So then I get to driving, and man, that was the hairiest drive I think of my life.
Because the lights were
really bright, and it seemed like they were all coming at me, and I'm like, oh, I thought I was done, but apparently I am not.
Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
That was outside of Baltimore.
Oh God, so it was back east in Baltimore.
The Baltimore Beltway, going like from the bottom to the top of the Beltway.
Willy Wonka's boat ride.
I think that was the name of the acid I took, actually.
Yeah, I drove once, but we were like back country roads up in like bumfuck outside of town in Washington State. So it was just mostly dark because there was no street lights. So I was just fucking like, I'm in space. And my friend was like, dude, let me drive. I'm like, no.
I'm in space. I gotta go.
I'm in space. But there was no one around. That's the good news. So finally, he just starts pummeling me, and I like have to pull over, and he drags me out of the car and probably saved.
Imagining that, pulling the president out of the car.
Probably saved both of our lives that night.
I got to say, one of the things of getting older is definitely I don't miss the hormonal shifts that even go into your 20s, where like the highs – maybe I was a little manic depressive, undiagnosed. I don't know, but I'd be depressed all the time. But then when I was happy and manic, I'd be like dancing around like fucking Barbara Streisand in a musical. I'd be just jumping and singing. I'd be so thrilled.
Do you have any video of that?
I'd pay for it.
Don't rain on my parade. But it was, it levels out. And then, which was nice because the sad parts, I wasn't like crying in bed every night. But part of me still misses, like, I miss being manic. I miss having, like, hearing a song, like a punk song on my tape deck and just freaking out in my bedroom by myself. I don't have that. That never happens to me anymore. So I don't miss it's like you even out. And part of me misses it, like the excitement of being young, even though it has some really bad parts where you're depressed and you're like, oh, the world sucks and you just want to cry. I mean, this is never one. A lot of people are just happy campers, but I think a lot of people have that where the hormones kind of die out and you level out and it just gets more manageable.
We certainly make bad choices in terms of the opposite sex as well whenever you have the hormones.
Because you have more hormones and your dick's thinking. Your dick's thinking more than your brain.
It's like, what was it? Why did I do this? And then, it's like it could have saved me a lot of hassle.
That's nice too.
Yeah, I probably a few people I would have not gotten involved with. back, way back. Although, you know, that still continued into my adult years, really. So I guess I can blame it on hormones a little bit. Maybe it's just like bad choices in general. They don't end the bad choices.
No, you started this by saying, what about, you know, growing old is fun.
Yeah.
But then you qualified it by saying that not that you know more, which to me is about the only thing there is good about getting old is that, you know, going to Greg's point, I do feel like I'm much more level-headed. I still get really pissed, but not like I used to. But at the same time, like Greg said, I also don't get super excited about shit like I used to. I can muster it, but it feels forced.
Yes,
but
enthusiasm is kind of a mystery to me these days.
Well, that's an interesting point. So what was the last thing any one of us was like, I mean, not like psychotic enthusiasm, but really genuinely excited about?
Like really interested in doing something?
Yeah, like, oh my God, I can't wait that blah, blah, or that this is happening right now, or I'm going to do this thing.
The only thing I can think of is currently is just getting my mother off of our mortgage. That's what I'm kind of excited about.
Thrilling. Wow.
And getting, like, making that happen.
Can I have the movie rights to that story, Matt? I want to buy the movie rights.
That's funny, but is that true? Like, that, like, literally that, you were enthusiastic.
That's like
about
the
that?
One big thing that's going on in my life right now. Well, you know, we've been in the middle of the virus thing, so there's not a whole lot else going on, right? So there's not a lot.
No, that's true. I mean,
in terms of things that, you know, I tell people that I'm in the worst emotional state you can be in, which is I am contented. You know, in other words, that's like it's like the worst place you can be is being okay with how things are. And I've been okay, even though, you know, I've had some medical emergencies here and there, but I've been basically okay. I've had like no real ambition for years.
Is that the worst thing though?
It is, because you're not striving, you know, now you're not trying to like make things greater, you know, you're just kind of coasting along. It's basically like being toast. You know, it's okay, it's good, it's useful, you know,
but how many people strive and fail, though? You know what I'm saying?
There's nothing wrong with failing if you learn something from it.
Sure, but it's not fun.
It's like today I was decided to go on this kick to determine what it would take to have a career in doing voiceovers, right? And it's an interesting thing. Am I excited about it? No, because everything I look at a little bit too carefully. You know, any venture I want to get involved in, it's like I see all the effort that's required to make something happen down the road, and I go, well, do I really want to put myself through all that? Do I really? What's the ultimate game plan? I'm like, these days, I'm just kind of, I feel like I'm just counting the days till I can't actually work at all anymore. So I'm like trying all these various different exit strategies, because I've been basically self-employed for my entire adult life and I have no real savings. You know, I mean, what we have is basically the house, which is why we're getting my mom off the mortgage. But there's going to come a point where my wife retires and she won't have any income other than pension, which is going to be that much. And where is that money going to come from to ensure that these mortgage payments keep getting paid off, you know, because
your five children will take care of you.
Yeah. But all my children are all like working like grocery store jobs. So it's
I was joking.
You know, I don't see that happening. I just go, okay, well, I just need to prepare to have a lot of warm clothing for my days on the street afterwards, you know? So looking towards that particular as the next chapter in my history. Hello, you got a quarter? I need to give somebody else a quarter. Anyway, but in terms of something, I guess the last time I was excited about something or like interested in something was probably in the early 2000s when I had this kick about doing stand-up comedy. And I took like a class on it, and then I started going to open mic nights. And then that's one of those things where I went, God, you know, I just looked at the effort that it would take to make it in that industry. And I'm like, do I want it? I'm like, I didn't really have the ambition to be famous anymore. I'd kind of gotten over that. You know, over the course of my life, I've dealt with many different celebrities and I've dealt with political stuff. And I felt like I made my mark in the world like decades ago. And so from that point, it kind of like was like, okay, well, I've achieved everything really that I kind of set out to achieve. I'm like, and I don't know how to make a time machine because that's like the thing that I'd really like to invent, but I don't have the slightest idea how you would do that. Neither does anybody else. I'm like, so yeah, I guess I'll just hang out for a while. So I've been hanging out for a long time.
Oh, you know? All right. Well,
do things that make things interesting, but nothing I get like really kind of captivated by. There's nothing really new that's doing it. You know, there's things that keep me busy. It's like recently I started doing website testing, which are, it's kind of interesting because I'm finding about different things and different things that people are creating, and I get to put in some input on that.
That is not passion.
No, it's just interest. You know, it's stuff that makes life more interesting for me.
Yeah, I still have interest.
But it's not like a drive. There's no, there's nothing that's driving me to like incredible success, you know.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, I mean, it used to be my kids, but now all my kids are adults, and I used to like supporting them, you know, and now it's just they're going doing their own lives, you know.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of like I look forward to our podcast every week. I look forward to one day maybe running karaoke again, you know, because that I find fun. I don't necessarily find it like this driving passion for karaoke, but I really enjoy doing it. That's why I do it. You know, it uses a lot of the things I learned from a long time ago, and it's become like this little mini career for me.
Brendan, when was the last time you had a lust for life and a passion for something? Or do you still have it? Maybe you still have that.
Yeah, here's it for you, Greg.
Yeah, I mean, two things. One, the last time I was like, I remember being kind of like giddy, like, oh my God, I can't wait till this happens, was I went to see the Foo Fighters in concert. And I'd never seen them, and I'm a big Foo Fighters fan, and I was like, it was coming up, and I remember, you know, like, being excited about it, and like, kind of, not necessarily counting down the days, but like, oh, it's a week from now. That was the last time, because live music and bands, to me, are that. I mean, uh-huh. I get excited about, like, I don't know, if the Dropkick Murphys were going to come to town, I'd be excited about that, and excited to go to the show.
I'd like to go with you if they do. That could
absolutely.
Be fun. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But you know, it's funny you bring that up because I saw Rush a few years back. Yeah. It was like their 40th anniversary tour or something. And I knew this was going to be like one of their last opportunities to see it. And so I took one of my kids to go with me. And I think I've kind of felt that way. But still, I took it kind of matter of factly. Because for me, I never really went to concerts. You know, I just didn't do it. For whatever reason, I preferred studio versions of things to seeing bands live. You know, so over the course of my life, I think I've gone to maybe 4 or 5 major concerts, I guess. You know, and two of those were for the Grateful Dead, and I wasn't even a Grateful Dead fan, and I wound up going to two of those. So
yeah, I mean, for me, I don't know if Greg feels the same way. For me, live music is probably the single most exhilarating thing, even if I don't like it that much.
Uh-huh.
Even if it's like jazz piano and I'm not even into it, but just the live performance and the reaction of the crowd who are into it because they love jazz piano, I still get like kind of worked up about it.
Huh.
But that's probably in terms of that sort of enthusiasm or I don't want to say ecstasy because that's a different, but that kind of like spiritual, like, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm so glad I'm here. It's live music. And that's been the problem for me. One, because I, you know, with being a grown up and old and, you know, you don't get to a lot of shows, but I would always try to find at least one a year that I would go to. And then now, fuck, you know, coronavirus, you know, it's just not.
Yeah, I found even when I was older, like, basically, I got really old 5 years ago. I like just shut up.
You got really old 5 years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I, you're like, 5 years older, Greg.
It's also my brain switched. My brain switched, like, because basically I was the most healthiest of my life from 45 to, like, 49 or 50. And that was like, that was actually my golden years where for the first time in my life, I wasn't a fat guy. I was riding my bike. I was healthy. I was up for anything. I didn't have pains all the time. I wasn't throwing my back. But I stopped going to shows, and I loved going to see punk rock bands. Like, I'd go like once a week all the time. Even when I had no money, I'd somehow scrounge some money. And so in my late 40s, after like 4 years of, or 2 years of not seeing a show, I went to a punk rock show. And I was exhilarated. It was ecstasy. I could use
that was the word I was looking for, exhilaration. Yet,
but this is the sad thing, because I'm an old man now. I was like, oh, I'm going back to that club. I'm doing this more often. And then I just forgot and just didn't care. And then like the next month, I was like, yeah, well, I didn't forget, but I was like, that was so great. I got to do this more often. And then life got in the way and I was like, oh, but I'm not going to,
you
know
what?
Home,
you guys have kind of revitalized me on this concept. I like that idea of going to see a band once a year. You know, it's like, I just never made that as like a goal, but that could be a fun thing to do, I think.
What's almost at our age, we have to force ourselves to do it because you forget how fun it is. Sometimes it's amazing.
Well, you know, here's so I had a friend of mine who's in Thievery Corporation, right? I think I told you about this. Yeah. He's the sax player for Thievery Corporation, which is like a dubstep band. They were pretty big about 8 years ago. Anyway, I didn't know he was in this big band, and I went to go see them perform at a local venue. And where there's like people around the block lined up to see these guys, you know, and it would shock me that my former fraternity roommate was like in this big band, and they did like 3 encores. It was like one of the most fun times I had in a long, long time.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is great. But I never equated it with going to see somebody else again. I went because he was a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And that's why I went. It wasn't just to go see a live band. And, you know, I'm like thinking back when I was in college, I used to go see live bands often, you know, like maybe once a week or every couple of weekends. Yeah. I was friends with band members, you know. And so, I don't know what happened somewhere along the line. I think I just got into a career mode and I just didn't go to live music anymore. You know, but there was a time like in the 90s where I barely listened to the radio for that matter. But, you know, I think that I would be interested, Greg, in maybe when the whole COVID thing dies down, you know, maybe we go out to like some music venues here and there, you know, we could just like flip a coin. I wouldn't give a shit. It'd be like something and just to support a local band of some kind.
Yeah.
You know, and they could potentially suck, you know.
I don't like seeing a jazz piano guy play if I don't like the music, but like punk rock is like such a visceral thing. Like seeing it live is really potent. Like your body just starts moving, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Against your will.
Well, you know, one of my kids goes to these house shows a lot. At least they did before COVID happened.
Yeah.
And so I would hear these things, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember doing stuff like that back when I was around your age. I'm like, what the hell happened? Like, where did it go? You know, there's something changed along the way. I don't know. Things became less interesting to me, I guess. You know, I get more interested in, like, bigger issues outside of my own entertainment. You know, and I'm thinking maybe I should be more interested in my own entertainment again.
Yes,
I don't know. Absolutely.
Yes, you should watch Netflix shows.
I go back to just being more of a spectator.
So there's one thing I wanted to bring up for
it's not just that show, Greg.
I know. But do you guys find that it is interesting as people get older? They're just like, I got to say, they're less sociable. Like, remember when you were in your 20s and 30s, your friends would just pop in. You know, people, I guess they had more time. But it does seem like as you get older, you're just more like, I'm fine staying home. And you guys have wives.
Yeah.
And even, yeah.
So you have reasons to be home, too.
I have no one.
I like my wife. I like spending time with her.
Oh, so I know. Like, yeah. And I'm totally alone. And yet I still feel this, even though I should be lonely and be like, oh, I wish people would come by. I still am just like, oh, I'm so glad I'm going home tonight. I'm going to be by myself.
Well, when I was between wives, I was like that. You know, I was okay with
staying
home or going out. Yeah. And, you know, I think my basic routine was I would go to my job and I would then go home. And that was like my routine most of the time. But I did a lot of dating too. You know?
Well, that's sociable.
I,
yeah,
for me, sociable. Dating was kind of entertainment because I was like, oh, what's this woman going to be like?
Yeah.
I'm like, how's this woman going to reject me?
Yeah.
Like, how's this going to work out?
Or what fault you're going to find in her so you can reject her?
Oh, those are easy to find.
I know from you.
I think, did I tell you like my stock answer for breaking up with somebody?
That I what was it?
It's, you might have told me. It's there are aspects of my personality that will probably never mesh with aspects of your personality, and it's for the best that if we really, you know, we really shouldn't make this go any further because that could become very problematic down the road. So, you know, I like you definitely. I'm like, but you know, there's obviously problems with both of us that could never work out. So we should just end these things at this right now.
You are such a smoothie. Look at that. Like, oh, I want to fuck.
I never had a.
But I'm gonna give you a nice
I never had
answer.
A negative reaction to that, other than one woman going, "Well, I think I could work with that." I'm like, "No, no, I just really it wouldn't be a good idea."
No, that's a very smart.
Because it's pretty answer. True too. You know, yeah. it's a true statement, and for the most part, you know, the question becomes, you know, what. It's like a friend of mine was telling me, he's like, Matt, at this stage, at our age, he goes, everyone's got red flags. I'm like, that's a good point.
Yeah. You know,
everyone does have red flags. There's something wrong with everybody to some extent. So the question is, what of their red flags are you willing to tolerate? You know, and growing up, as we get older, we start witnessing which red flags we're willing to deal with more so than other red flags, things that are wrong with another person. We go, you know what? I'm okay with that. I can handle that personality flaw, but that personality flaw, no, it's just not
right.
Good, you know, so
I just don't have too much, unfortunately, to contribute to this. In that next year, Holly and I will be married for 30 years.
You guys are amazing.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. We've obviously been through our ups and downs for sure. You know, but we've always sort of worked it out. Sometimes
that's what makes you amazing.
One or the other's will, you know, one of us will the other to make it work. But going back to what you were saying about motivation when you get older, I feel like, you know, like I was in a corporate job and, you know, it sucked. But did it suck any more than anybody else's corporate job? Probably not. You know, and it's only bullshit, but whatever. But I decided, you know what, fuck this. And I was, what, 47, 48? And I said, you know what, fuck this. I'm going to go back to working for myself. I'm going to build a business. And I'm going to quit this fucking soul-sucking job. And I'm going to work for myself. And I'll be able to work wherever I want and blah, blah, blah. And I did it. You know, it took me a couple of years. You know, I had to spend nights, like every night, like studying shit and learning shit and learning technology shit and all this stuff that wasn't necessarily, you know, in the front of my mind. But I was driven by the fact that I didn't want to just die in this fucking cubicle
right.
at the software company and fuck that shit. But it took a lot of work and I was motivated. Was excited? I don't know. It was a lot of work. So someday I was motivated for sure. Some days I was excited and I felt like, you know, I was moving in the right direction. And other days I went into like horrible depression and like, this is never going to fucking work.
Yeah, I've gone through entrepreneurial stages and I've learned that I, one, hate having a boss or anybody over me. And two, I hate having employees because I've done them both. And I'm not a fan of either. You know, I mean, some people who work for you are totally fine, but it's just all of the red tape, all of the hassles, all of the taxes and things you have to deal with, all of the potential problems that employee has. I'm like, you know what? I just don't need that kind of aggravation in my life. So I've kind of gotten to this, you know, where I don't make a lot of money with what I do, but I'm so much happier with how my life is that it's, you know, and I'm fortunate because my wife is, you know, the bigger breadwinner, you know, but together we have a pretty good life because of that. So it enables me to have a little bit more fun, but she's a really creative person too, as well. Cause she's like running like two other businesses while also having like her full-time position as a teacher, you know?
Yeah. My challenge was in terms of the more getting paid, it was 100% me.
Yeah.
And so I had to like stage it out where, like, at a certain point, I'm not going to make that like given salary anymore, which was, that's what sucks you into that whole game. It's like, okay, this sucks, but I know how much money I'm going to get each month. And that covers my bills in a little bit. And I'll put up with whatever bullshit versus being an entrepreneur and like, this month was great and this month sucked. And you got to kind of find balance in the force. But, you know, like I said, I don't think I was exhilarated about it. But
yeah, it's hard to be exhilarated when you know you're giving yourself problems. You know?
Yeah.
Because you know you're giving yourself problems to solve.
Right, but I was up for the challenge and I was into it from the perspective of, I was like, okay, so what do I need to learn now? And I had to motivate myself. I'd come home from work at like 5. I'd do like an hour with the fam and dinner and whatever. And then I'd go upstairs and I'm like, okay, what do I got to know? What do I got to learn? What, you know?
When I was having I get it totally. When I was running my PR consulting business, I guess the moments of excitement I had were, what is this potential client's occupation? Because the cool thing about having PR and marketing jobs is you have this wide range of clientele that a pool that you can draw from in terms of where you can get work, right? And I had a guy who did industrial clean rooms was his job. And then I had another woman who did an organic beauty salon and that was a whole new concept for me too. Cause like I never went to a beauty salon or anything and the organic clean rooms, that was a whole different ball of wax too, you know? And then I had a guy who ran a nightclub and I'm like, you know, those are the things that were interesting for me was what is it about other people that makes their lives interesting. And that I think is where I still derive joy from life, which is why I watch these reality shows, because what they do is they give me this microcosm of individuals that I wouldn't necessarily come across on my own. And I get to kind of get an interesting magnifying glass into their lives, which are generally staged to a large degree, but still, you know, those different personalities and how they interact and what they do, for me, that's what I really find fascinating. So people are still of strong interest to me in general. You know, and for what reason, it's hard to say. I think it just goes back to the old PR days where I just like really being interested in how can I predict behavior and how people will respond to different circumstances. And those wacky shows, those reality shows, give me a really good idea of people with certain personality types, how they will respond to certain situations and how I can be prepared for that if it ever comes across my own way. So in terms of aging being fun, for me, it's every time I find out about a new person and learn more about them, that I think is what engages me in life still. You know, as long as I can keep learning new things about other people, that I think is more fun. So that's like why today I was looking into this voiceover thing and I'm finding out about this guy who got laid off from his corporate job and he's now been doing voiceover work for like 14 years and he's parlayed being laid off into now making $400,000 a year doing voiceovers, and he started doing it from his house. And I'm like, okay, I'm a little more interested now because
that could be you.
I love working from my house. This is
and you like have a great radio voice.
Yeah, but you know, his whole thing was it's not about talent; it's about, you know, it's really about drive and stuff, you know, and how much work you're willing to put into something. And that's where I get kind of caught up because I'm generally lazy. So I go, okay, well, what am I willing to do here? So again, I'm just stepping one toe into that industry at the moment. But, you know, considering I've been out of work from my actual job, my business since March, I don't know how much longer it's going to be. There's a vaccine coming. We'll see how that turns and changes things, you know, but I think I still like that concept. And I've been interested in doing voiceovers for a long, long time. I just never really push forward in it. You know, I mean, I took broadcast performance back in college, so I've always had that interest in projecting my voice over the airwaves to some extent, but I never wanted to be like a DJ per se. So anyway, but what makes aging fun for you, Greg? What gives you some excitement in your current Burgerville existence?
Not much.
A new comic book every month?
I'm the exact opposite of you. The older I get, the more people I meet, I get more discouraged with the human race and how I just want to be a hermit. Yeah, I'm a bitter old fuck. I do like the fact that I don't cry every night like I did in my teens and 20s.
Well, I'm sad about that.
Yeah, I was a little sad little Smith listening fuck. But I don't have much. I definitely had more hope then, even though I was so depressed. I was always like, things can change. Things might change. You know, you read stories about a lot of guys who are losers when they're young and they figured it out. But then when you're 50, you know, pushing 40, you're like, things aren't going to change. And then especially when you're 53, you're like, no, this is it. And to be honest, I'm very content. I'm not a sad guy for the most part. I know it sounds like I'm very bleak, but my life's very comfortable. Even though I work at Burgerville, I don't hate my job. It's not the easiest job or rewarding job, but I've got great shit in my house. I get to come home to my nice apartment. I love it. But it does seem like the hope drifts away where, like, who knows? Like, you know, I was in a band in my 20s and we had no chances to be big, but it was always like, ooh, maybe I could make a living off this and not have a day job. Like, and you realize, nah, that's not going to happen, Greg. This is your life. This is it.
This is, it doesn't like this. Have to be that bleak, Greg. You can always strive for something more.
I know, that's what I'm saying. But like you, I don't have the ambition. I didn't even, in my 20s, I didn't have the ambition. I could have done a lot of things that I was really interested in and done better. Like, for example, I was in this band that had some little acclaim in my small town in Tucson, Arizona. Well, it's not that little town. It's
what was the name of the band?
City. The Weird Lovemakers. And we, you know, we went to South by Southwest and we toured and had some albums out from this thing. But I just didn't even like, I could have practiced my guitar so I wouldn't fuck up every time we played. You know what I mean? Like just the little things to do. I was like, nah, this is just fun. I could really work at this and get better. So like, I'm not saying be Jimi Hendrix, just like, just great.
Well, it's like that guy who showed up in the karaoke show the other night. The guy used to be the guitarist for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, right? It's like, yeah, he's a guy who worked all his life, and then he was with the Chili Peppers for 10 years, and then he gets tossed aside.
Yeah, but that guy's set for life.
Who was that?
I mean, come on. That guy's
a guy named Josh Klinghoffer.
He was like a
childhood friend of one of my regulars for karaoke, and she talked him into coming on to my karaoke show Saturday night. Really nice guy.
Really good singer.
Yeah, he was actually a really good singer. Wow. I was like, it was kind of surreal because she was hammered, his friend, and kept like talking about it. Because we were trying to keep it on the down low that he was a celebrity. You know, she had asked me to not bring it up. I'm like, fine, that's easy for me to do. I won't talk about it. You know, but then she's making all these allusions to him being famous on the show, going, it's weird that he's such a good singer. He's really talented. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, she just does not want to keep the secret at all.
You know, but that guy did just fine. I mean, being in the Red Hot Chili Peppers for 10 years, that guy's set for 10 lifetimes.
No, I didn't realize that I'd seen him before because I wasn't familiar with who the newer guitarist for the Chili Peppers was, but I didn't realize I'd seen him before on that carpool karaoke show that James Corden does.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
So
I guess I saw him too.
You did, you know, it's like, and I decided to watch it again today. I'm like, oh yeah, that was definitely the guy who was on my show. I thought maybe she was like playing a joke on us, but, and you know, he was like this very quiet, unassuming guy. And then I watched like some of his some clips on YouTube to see like what kind of a guitarist he was. This guy is like freaking high energy. He bounces around more than Flea does on stage. And which was
I'm pretty sure he was the guitarist in you know, the early 90s.
He didn't join them until 2009 2010.
Oh god, see, that's
so what he's been with them for like the last 10 years. What happened was the guitarist just before him came back, and that's why he lost the job.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
So they didn't actually really want to get rid of him, but they really had rapport with the guy who had left, you know. So, yeah. But they, actually, those two guys are pretty good. They were good friends, apparently, at one point. But anyway, but nice guy. But all I'm saying is that, you know, Greg had you wanted to do this great thing in punk music, and if you had practiced more, like, it's no guarantee that you would have this.
Oh, no.
Especially in punk music. Like, how many punk bands, I'm sure you can only count them on one, maybe two hands, have gone.
Yeah. Well, like, what's the 90s?
Skyrocketed, like, you know, into.
But 90s was a weird time where it's like, wow, punk bands. It's not like I thought we were going to be Green Day by any means, but I just thought any band or any artistic endeavor, if you're doing art and you don't have a day job, even if you're living poverty wages, you win. That's awesome. If you like have this art you love, like you're a crafter, you make socks or something, and you get to support yourself, that's great. That's the best life I could have hoped for. If I could just tour.
If you're doing the life you love doing, which is kind of what's happened with me with karaoke, is it's not a huge income, but it's a better income than a lot of people make working minimum wage doing that, running my show, and I just run it four nights a week, you know, so I still make more than a lot of people who work 5 days a week. But still, at the same time, it's something I really enjoy doing, and that's part about it that I like the most.
That's great,
you know. And for me, it's just like buying audio equipment makes me happy.
Right. So, yeah, that's cool. Yeah. So, Greg.
Yeah.
It's never too late.
Yes, Greg, it's not.
I want to be that. I could have stayed in that corporate job and kept that money, probably negotiated better pay, and just fucking phoned it in for the next 10 years. But I didn't do that because I wasn't satisfied with that. So you love comic books. There's no reason, given all of the opportunities out there, that you couldn't make at least the same amount of money that you're making now doing comic book
That's
shit.
Not true. It's worse.
No, like, it is when true.
When I was a kid, I loved comics. That was my other passion. It was more than punk rock. I liked comic books, and I did fanzines and put out comic books. And I could have worked at it, but I was too lazy. I never had the ambition. And that takes a lot of hard work to become a great...
No, I'm not talking about making comic books. I'm talking about commenting on comic books, selling comic books.
Yeah.
Being a comic book expert.
That takes some ambition. There's a lot of competition out there. There's a lot
But you know what? It doesn't matter.
If there's a lot of competition, that means there's a lot of opportunities to make money at it.
That's right.
Yeah. Really?
Yes, that's how it works.
I know.
Supply and demand. So there's obviously a demand. And that's really more the thing. But
I know when I get.
But if you can find the thing that you, but you're not so lazy. You go to you're on time to your job every day. You flip burgers 8 hours a week. Would you rather work on comic books eight hours a day?
Yeah, but then I'm exhausted after doing that, so I don't want to do anything when I get home. I just.
But
wanna...
what I'm saying though is that wouldn't you be happier working on comic books 8 hours a day?
Yeah.
Okay,
but
so what?
That's a rock star job. That's like saying, hey, Greg, you'd be a rock star. Like working in comics is like. Not a lot of guys want to do that, and they don't get to do it. Believe me.
Let me give you some way to get into Dark Horse, man. Be like a flunky for Dark Horse. You get the same pay.
Let me give you an example.
A guy with no computer skills? They don't want a guy who doesn't know how to use his Facebook page.
Well, they might hire you just to clean the freaking toilets, but you'd be working at a comic book company.
And I could work my way up.
That's right. But you would be at a comic book company, you know? You'd be like in a place.
It would be fun to just pick their brain.
And it's not that far from you. You could take a bus to Dark Horse.
No, I know. I've been there.
Okay. Downtown Milwaukee, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Milwaukee. That's an Oregon thing. Right.
Yes, with an IE.
All I'm saying relative to your competition thing, Greg, because I'm a huge Star Wars nerd, right?
You can tell by his hat.
Yeah, now this is sort of just accidental. But do you know how many YouTube channels there are about Star Wars? 100%. Not movies, just 100% Star Wars shit.
Do you think those guys are making money?
I know that at least five of them have 1 million subscribers.
Yeah. Oh, so if I had a computer, I might be able to do that.
So that's
what happened to that tablet we had you charge last week.
I gotta Get some Wi-Fi going.
But I told you how you can do the Wi-Fi is off of your phone, probably.
It's not working. It's saying like you have to have Wi-Fi to set it up with your phone to link it up. No,
your phone, does your phone have a hotspot capability?
It does, and it's not, doesn't seem to be working.
What do you mean?
It's like it says you need Wi-Fi to link your phone up to this tablet.
And no, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about setting up the hotspot on your phone. First of all,
I guess I don't know how to do that. See, that's the thing. The reason I have no ambition is because I've always been really dumb, and I figured that none of my dreams would come to fruition because I would fail.
Greg, if you're really dumb, we wouldn't have really interesting conversation or a slightly interesting conversation every week. No,
that's just me being drunk and spouting shit off. I mean, that's not smart.
You know how to use the word erudite and hirsute earlier. You're not dumb.
This is true. I'm not a moron. I'm not a simpleton.
You're not a cretin?
A cretin, yes.
Going back to one of our earlier episodes.
You know what? I got a whole bunch of nerd technology friends. I'm going to find you a fucking laptop, dude.
No, I have one. Well, yes. I have a tablet.
He doesn't know the difference between a tablet and a laptop.
Yeah,
what he doesn't have is he doesn't have Wi-Fi is what he doesn't have.
Okay, well, that's what step one is. I'm going to get you a laptop for Christmas. I'm going to figure that shit out.
No, you don't have to do that.
No, I don't have to do it. You're right, but I will.
I don't like charity.
No, it's not charity. You know what? This is one of those things that makes me happy. Like, if I could get you a laptop, that would make me happy because you don't have one. Now, the Wi-Fi, you're going to have to fucking solve that shit yourself.
Oh, I'll do that, yeah. I could do that.
So if I get you a laptop, will you get Wi-Fi?
Could you afford afford $60 a month, Greg, for something?
Is that how much it costs up now?
I don't know what it is in Portland. I'm not just using now, that as a number.
Wait, couldn't it be bundled into my phone bill? Like, so would it be $60? I'm already paying for phone and unlimited data.
Well, what you should do is you should contact your phone service and see what it would cost to add Wi-Fi to your
I can't account. Right now, but after the new year, I'll be in a better position. So I might be able to afford it.
Who's your phone company?
AT&T.
Okay. They've got a plan. We need to figure that shit out. Negotiate that shit. We can get your Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Okay.
You shouldn't have to pay. How much are you paying for your phone and whatever, cable or whatever the hell you have?
I pay $100 for unlimited data, a cell phone. A smartphone.
Yeah. How long have you been with AT&T?
Oh, God, 20 years.
Okay, fuck those guys. It's time to fuck those guys over and get you some Wi-Fi.
Okay. I will. Because believe me, guys, I have podcast ideas out the wazoo. You don't want to talk about this shit. Like, I have comic, and I listen to these podcasts. I might be able to get a little Patreon shit going.
You should, I was just looking up AT&T online right now. They have holiday offers going on. So you should check into holiday offers through AT&T in terms of getting yourself Wi-Fi.
I will.
You don't have to get the top. No, I'm saying look into it now. You could call them and see how much it would cost.
I know.
That shouldn't stop you. Right. Finding out doesn't cost anything.
It takes ambition.
And
a lack of laziness.
Takes looking at a website on your phone.
Yeah.
Well, what else are you going to do? What else you got to do? Greg?
Oh, my God. Millions of things. Look up comic sites on my phone, comic podcasts, nerdy shit, read comic books.
You could all look it up on your tablet that way.
But what if you were doing that and getting paid? I mean, I don't know how much you make.
Oh, my God. I would love it. Like, Burger Town. Thing Matt suggested. Matt offered to us, like, hey, you guys want to pick up some of these gigs reviewing websites? I mean, that's way better than flipping burgers at Burgerville, but I couldn't do it because I didn't have a computer.
Right.
But I was like,
that's your problem. That's your problem.
All right. I don't even have the ambition to make my life slightly better. It's not even a good ambition.
So as the Sith Lord of this threesome, I'm going to get you a computer.
He will get you a computer.
No, I can get one. I can figure it out if I really wanted to. That's the thing.
I'm going to be your motivation and figure that shit out for you.
He's going to harass you, Greg. So I was thinking, well, we should start wrapping up, that we should do a wrap-up show of all the episodes for the new year. For December 30th is a Wednesday, so it's like the day before New Year's. That's when we should do our check every episode out show.
That's like our six-month anniversary, roughly, right?
Something like that.
It's start in June.
It's our COVID-iversary.
COVID-iversary.
That's right.
That's it rolls off the tongue.
It does. Like it. It's incredible.
COVID-iversary.
So what would we like to talk about next week? What do we want? So we got 1, 2, 3 weeks before that show happens. So we could come up with something interesting. We could come up with something involving Greg getting Wi-Fi in the next couple of weeks. It's like the whole discussion is about
that. I was thinking we should talk about the media.
The media.
That's been a big thing the past 4 years. The media.
It's been around a long time, Greg. What do you have in mind?
I know, but now it's become a hot point. The fake media.
Now
media.
It's become a hot point? Where have you been?
It's been a it's definitely the past 4 years. It's become a thing that fake media, all that shit.
Fake news?
Have we done
it's
a thing
on fake news, but now it's become a thing.
All right, Greg.
Now, like right now it's a thing?
It's a thing. What about social media specifically?
For a second, I thought you were going to say sweater vests. So we could do a whole episode on sweater vests.
Yes.
That could be good social media. Because I just saw Social Dilemma. Is that the name of the Netflix?
You know, I just watched that too. It was actually a really good movie. I was surprised.
Mm-hmm. I hated the thing with the kid, though. The whole after-school special thing of having that teenager. That ruins it.
What?
Do you remember in the social media, there's this little thing they have, a linking device where
the
it's
social
like
network?
A teenager who like goes before that tribunal of those three guys who are telling him, like, you're going to listen to this. And the kid looks like he's 28. He's supposed to be a high school student.
Wait, what movie? You're not talking about the social network, the story of like Zuckerberg, are you?
No, Social Dilemma.
The Social Dilemma.
Oh, I was thinking of the Social
Network. Do you remember
that? I saw Social Network, not Social Dilemma.
Oh, that's a different one, huh?
Yeah,
different.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's why I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
But Social Dilemma is
Social Network
is
a great movie.
Yeah.
David Fincher.
The dramatization part with the kid, the teenager.
Yeah, Social Dilemma, I haven't seen.
Yeah.
It's powerful.
I've seen it, Greg, and I know what you're saying. It seemed a little ridiculous, but whatever.
But a lot of those ridiculous documentaries out there.
All the actual documentary information in there is very powerful, and it's all stuff you got new in your gut, and seeing it all coalesce, you're like, wow, social media has fucked us up, like apocalyptically so. Like, we're fucked because
okay.
of that.
You know, actually, that's probably not a bad idea. We could, like, delve into social
it's
media
powerful,
in the for, like, the as our next client.
Yeah.
Social media on trial.
I don't know if we're ready for another on trial, but we can certainly do something with it.
Whatever it you guys do, whatever you guys do, just text me at 3 a.m.
Okay.
About your ideas.
You bet.
That's
you've got it. Because usually Greg's in rare form whenever the karaoke shows are over. So that's the perfect time for us to be sending you texts.
I'm more brilliant than. I'm drinking a fifth of bourbon and.
Drinking.
My ideas are like on fire.
You have fire ideas, like Fire Island, but they're your ideas. All right. So what was the show today? What was our client? Our client was aging is fun, but hard on the knees. And I think it may have been hard on a lot of people going, oh, God, we're just hearing about old guys talking about their medical issues.
This is what I do every day, talking to people on the
phone. This is like talking to like my grandfather. What the hell? Why am I listening to these guys?
Wait, before you go, can we do a demographic check?
We
stopped doing that.
We did. We haven't checked it in a long time. A few weeks.
Oh, so you can't just pop a button and pull it up?
Well, I just didn't have it set. So, our listenership has definitely gone way down over the last few weeks.
All right.
How surprising.
Well, it's because there was an algorithm change with an anchor. And so they made it so there's more real data as opposed to before where the data wasn't quite as real. So speaking of fake news, so in terms of demographics, the podcast where people are listening to this from, or the listening platforms, Apple Podcasts is at 26%, Spotify is 8%, Anchor is 8%, Overcast is 6%, and then there's Other, which is 48%. So people are listening to us on apparently a bunch of other platforms. But demographic-wise, our key demographics are the ages of 45 to 59, and that's at 77% listening is that demographic.
Male 35, or female?
35 to 40, I don't know that yet. 35 to 44 is 7%. 28 to 34 is 1%, but 23 to 27 is 2%. 60 plus is 7%. So with the sweet spot for us is the ages of 45 to 59, and it's females are 73%, 20% male, and 6 non-specified.
Six non-specified.
Yes.
Awesome. Any new weird things with the countries, Matt? Like, any new countries have picked us up?
Well, United States is now at 91%.
We've offended everyone else in the world.
We have. France is down to 6%. Everybody else is under 1%. So The under 1%ers are Ireland, Canada, India, Nigeria, Brazil, Germany, Ukraine, Philippines, Bangladesh, Singapore, and United Kingdom.
Now, because of this new algorithm, is there really someone in Singapore listening to us?
Well, it could be, but what it just means is that we have less plays that are happening. But, you know, I forgot to mention this, guys. We have had over 1,000 total plays of all of the podcasts put together. So that's something to be said, you know.
Do you mean listen to?
Yes, two times where they've listened to our podcast, it's happened over 1,000 times.
The last week, how many people listened?
16. 16 plays. Well, this is per episode, so
I know, but three of them are us.
So the Heroes were 16 plays. The Sitcoms on Trial was 16. The Steaming Pile of Democracy was 23. Before that was Ballots, Bullets, and Burgers, and that was 31 plays. Prior to that was 27 plays of the Urban Legends, and then Halloween Turnip was 38 plays. I still love that title. And then the Entertainment is Bad for You has gone up to 46. It was kind of low before. It's bumped up from it was before. And then Marriage and Glue Sniffing is at 51. And the next highest is Idiocracy at 55. And then The Second Client, 59. And then The First Client still is number one at 74 plays. So...
because that's the first episode, and that's what we would try. And then they say, I'm not coming back.
I can't listen to more of this.
No.
I'd be happy if people just read the titles and go, these are slightly clever. If I could get somebody to just message us that saying, yes, your titles are slightly clever, but I don't listen to you at all, I'd be okay with that. But if they don't listen, they can't hear me asking for that. Anyway, so we need pithy and profound. All right, so Brendan, you do pithy. Greg, you do profound.
Oh, God.
Pithy? Pithy. Fuck that owl on his wall.
Okay, Greg, what do you got?
In this lonely time of autumn, I go upon a long and lonely journey, severing all ties.
Severing? You mean severing?
Severing? Sure.
This has been the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker Computer Telecast, where any advice has been designed purely for amusement and deep-sea diving. Please take a candy on your way out, pet the lion tamer, and subscribe to this computer telecast if you know it's good for you. The Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker deny all culpability in today's events and are not to be confused with real law offices that have a secretary and books and stuff. Thank you all. Have a good day.